So I'm not sure what I'm going to be able to show you today, but what I'm going to be talking about is making Tickle go faster. From talking to some of you, that isn't really a big concern, but it's always nice to have performance. And I used to use Tickle to process bazillions of transactions a day, and it's just never enough speed. Okay, there we go. So first, let me thank the conference organizers for doing the conference. I've been to a couple academic conferences recently, and the hotels might be nicer, but the people are nicer at the Tickle conference. Would be nice to have heat in the rooms, though, but anyway. It's not your fault. This is joint work with my buddy Matthew Zaleski. He's working on his PhD at the University of Toronto, and I'm sort of hanging around at the University of Toronto. So what I'm going to tell you about is how the virtual machine interprets bytecode. I know a lot of you know that already, but we'll just do a quick review. One of the key problems with interpreter performance in general is dispatch, and I'm going to sort of tell you what dispatch is. And a particular problem with dispatch on modern central processors. So this is going to be a lot of low-level stuff in this talk. There's no GUI. We start at the machine code, and we go down from there. So that problem with dispatch we call actually the context problem. And that may have been risky. I'm just trying this to get this to show up on my laptop here. Good. And then I'll tell you what we did about the context problem, something we call context writing, sort of a mix of some old ideas and some new ones. And then I'll tell you how we did. So as most of you know, the way that the Tickle interpreter has worked since Tickle 8.0 is that you take the source, compile it on the fly with a bytecode compiler into a bytecode, and then you interpret that bytecode. And here on the left, you see some classical Tickle source. And on the right, that's the bytecode it gets turned into. You don't really need to look at the details, but that's the way things work. It's a pretty high-level bytecode, which turns out to be significant. And then, again, most of you probably know the way the interpreter works is it just takes that bytecode, stores it in an array of unsigned characters, has a little virtual program counter that points into that array, and then the interpreter is really just a for loop with a switch statement in it. We get the next opcode out of the program, and then we figure out which opcode it is, and depending on which one, we do some work. This purple stuff here in the box is the work, and I haven't really put the real work there because it might be too big, but I call that the instruction body or even just the body of the bytecode. Okay, so what's wrong with this? I mean, interpreting bytecode is a lot faster than interpreting source, but it's still kind of slow because it's an interpreter. There's a whole lot of problems that make interpreters slow. One of the sort of easy ones for lazy people like myself to tackle is high dispatch overhead. And what I mean by that is how the switch statement in that we just saw actually dispatches those instruction bodies. So to tell you really what the problem is, first I'm going to tell you what the C compiler does with the switch statement. So what it does is it takes each one of those instruction bodies and, you know, makes a machine code for it like a C compiler normally does. And then it puts the addresses of each one of those bodies into a big table. So for each opcode, you basically have a machine code address of that body. And then when we want to execute one of those opcode bodies, what we do is, well, first we've got to look at the virtual program counter and figure out which opcode we want to dispatch. And then we do a bunch of useless work that the C compiler generates for a switch statement. It doesn't really help us in this case, but sort of always does this bounds check. And then it has to do that table lookup, which it's actually necessary if you set up your interpreter like this, but turns out there are better ways. And then it has to do an indirect branch instruction. So a piece of assembly language here. You figured out the address you want to go to, and this goes there. And this all takes, on my UltraSpark 3, all this work is on an UltraSpark 3, takes 17 cycles. Just, you haven't really done any work yet. You're just figuring out what work you want to do. Okay. So, you know, a lot of this stuff, as I mentioned, is a little bit troublesome. This load here is unaligned, and on a modern memory system, that's a problem. And then we had this useless work, and it turns out we can actually avoid that table lookup by doing it at sort of load time of the bytecode program. And there's a technique called direct threading, which you can implement portably in GNU C, and it really boils things down to these two machine code instructions instead of all that work. It gets the job done in 12 cycles instead of 17, and that can be a big improvement. And we can do this portably in GCC. And actually, I think we should probably consider putting this into Tickle because it does give a little bit of a win. I'll show you the numbers later. So that's better, but it's still only, you know, two machine code instructions. Why is it taking 12 cycles to do this? Well, the reason is what's a modern CPU run at? Like 3 gigahertz, right? A cycle time is a third of a nanosecond. You can't get a lot of work done in a third of a nanosecond. So what the CPU does, as a lot of you probably know, is it divides the work up into a pipeline in many stages. In one cycle, you might fetch the instruction, then you might decode it, then you might load some stuff out of memory, and then maybe you really do the work. On a modern pipeline like my UltraSpark CPU, it's actually much worse than this. It's 14 stages in an UltraSpark 3. Modern revs of the Pentium 4 might have, you know, 30 stages in their pipeline, right? So the way this works is, you know, when we're fetching the when we're executing this add instruction here, we're probably fetching this load instruction down here, or actually maybe way further in the future. So this is all real good, except that you have to know where you're going, right? We have to know when we're executing the add that we should be fetching the load. When we're executing this load, we're going to fetch that jump. But when we're executing here, what are we going to fetch? We don't know, right? Because we don't know where the jump went. So you have to prefetch instructions, but to prefetch, you have to know where you're going. Is that clear to everybody? Yeah, okay. So what the CPU does is it employs something called a branch target predictor, good modern CPUs that are pipeline. They have to have these things, so they just slow way down. What that does is it basically looks at the location of the indirect jump instruction in the program, and it remembers where it went last time. So when we're executing this jump, maybe we went off to 42 last time, and we're executing the jump at 28, maybe we went to 1,000. So the next time we execute this jump, we're going to guess that we're going to go to 42 again. So you predict the branch target from the past behavior. And that works pretty well for your average program. But it doesn't work too well. Yeah, where did it go? There's supposed to be a pretty diagram with an animation there and all kinds of good stuff, but that's too bad. Well, I can show that animation to some of you later. I have a PDF of it, but it basically shows that problem. But people get the vague idea of what's going on there. What's going on is that the hardware is using the program counter for prediction, but there's only one switch statement in the program, right? So we only get to use one entry in the branch target address cache, where the virtual program is using the virtual program counter to figure out what to do next. Okay, so so that branch, that switch statement, when it wants to figure out where it goes, it depends on the virtual program counter. You've got this data-driven control flow, and there's all these targets. Each one of those opcodes is another target. So what happens is the processor mispredicts 85% of the time. This fellow Anton Ertl in Vienna figured this out. And that costs you like 10 cycles or more every time you want to dispatch an opcode. So that's a big problem. How can we avoid this? Well, what we do is we take this old idea we figured out called subroutine threading that's kind of fallen out of favor, but it works really well on a modern central processor. And what we do is we just take the virtual program and we do a very lightweight compilation. Yes, this is not portable. We generate one machine code instruction, a call. Okay, so if we have this bytecode program, we get this native program. And what that results in is that we correlate the native PC, if we're here, we can tell that we're well correlated with a virtual PC, we're here in the virtual program. And this gets dispatched done in 6 cycles, which is a lot faster than a 17-cycle switch, okay, on an UltraSpark. It's the improvement is even, switch is even slower on a better processor like the Pentium. And this is even faster on a Pentium. We call this synthesized emitted code here the context threading table, just because we have to give it a name. So we call this technique context threading. It's sort of, like I said, subroutine threading is an old idea, but this is our implementation of it. Subroutine threading is really just an idea. To make it work, you have to handle some details like what do you do with the operands in the bytecode? Like if you're pushing 1, where did the 1 go? So in the paper, kind of explain how that works. We presented this idea at CGO, Code Generation and Optimization, in San Jose in March. In addition to subroutine threading, when I say context threading, that's our technique, we take it and we also throw in some optimizations. It turns out that that table of emitted code, those calls, are a really nice place. You have a sort of a very lightweight compiler now. You don't have to write a big compiler, but if you want to compile maybe one instruction, you can, and it's pretty easy. And I'm going to show you two or three optimizations that we did when we applied context threading to Tickle. Or not. This is, well, yeah. Maybe I'll try to get a, if you guys don't mind indulging me, I'll just get a PDF going here. Might be a little easier to see what's going on. Or if we have we have a couple of minutes, maybe I'll just quickly run through that context problem example for you too. So here we've got basically a simple control flow graph of the interpreter, right? Our switch statement and a bunch of work we might want to do. And this is a little bytecode program, and here's the branch target predictor, right? So suppose we come in here, we want to execute this push. So the switch statement says, okay, we need to do a push. Well, the CPU is going to say, where's that going to go? It's going to look in the branch cache, and it's going to say, well, where'd it go last time? Well, it doesn't know. It hasn't done it before. So the process is going to stall for like 12 cycles. That's going to slow things down. So after the 12 cycles, it figures out that it needs to do the push. It's going to do the push, and it's going to remember for next time where the push went. Okay. Then it's going to go around again. It's going to do another push. It's going to look in the BTAC, and you know what? It got it right, because push is going to happen again, and that's going to go real fast. But the problem comes when we do it next time. We go for that. We want to execute this add. The switch statement says, well, let's jump to the add bytecode. The processor is going to, you know, try to look 14 cycles ahead into the future, and it's going to say, where's that switch going to go? It's going to look in here. It's going to say, well, you know, we did push a lot. I think we'll try to do that again. But it's wrong. And it's going to waste a lot of time. It's going to do all this work speculatively executing the push, and then when it figures out that it was wrong, it's going to have to throw it all away, and cycles are going by, and a lot of time is being wasted. It's going to happen again when we do the print, and because it's going to remember after the add that it did the add, and of course, that's not the right thing anymore, and now it has to do the print. So you can see the basic problem. And this is the problem that we call the context problem. Okay. So here's some of the things we can do once we have that emitted code. Here's a simple bytecode program, push, store, pop, incur, and so forth. And it gets compiled, but it's very lightweight compile, into this native code. But you know what? Push is a really simple instruction body. It doesn't do very much. Instead of calling it, why don't we just inline it, right? So we put it over there. And that's pretty easy to do, and it gets a nice performance win. So that's one thing you can do. Another thing you can do is you can turn virtual branches in the virtual program into native code, okay? So a simple virtual jump instruction becomes two native instructions. We just jump down here, and we have to set the virtual program counter. But as you can imagine, that goes real fast. Conditional branches in this case are a little more complicated. We still have to call out to the opcode body. And then we do the native branch. And this opcode body sets the processor condition code, and then we can do the jump. But this is still good because this branch here is a native branch, and the conditional branch predictors in the CPU get to work. And they know what to do, too, and that saves a lot of time as well. It turns out we can even fix that problem of having to call out that conditional branch code body. So what we did, we want to make loops go fast, right? And loops are ended by conditional branches. And so to make that work, what we did, we profiled, we said, what usually comes before conditional branches in a Tickle bytecode program? And it turns out it's these predicates, as you can imagine. You know, you say, if I is greater than 100, then, you know, stop the loop or something like that. And we take the code for this, and we move it into the emitted code and a little bit into the specialized body, which I'm going to show you in a second. There's something similar, a peephole optimization in Tickle 8.5, which works okay. But the payoff for native code is way bigger. So let me show you how that works. Here we've got a simple couple of bytecodes here that we've compiled. And this is the body. This is the work of a greater than predicate, OK? And here's the conditional branch. It does all this work. It's 91 native instructions long. And all we want to do is branch. So instead, what we do is we turn that into this other stuff, OK? Here's our emitted code. What we're going to do is we're going to, instead of calling greater than, We're going to call this special greater than. I'm going to show you how that works. And we have to set up, you know, if we fall through the branch, we have to set our virtual program counter. Oh, we took the branch. If we fall through the branch, we set the virtual program counter to the fall through case. So what does this thing look like? Well, it's pretty simple. We have to do a comparison. If we want to test greater than, we have to do a comparison just like greater than did. And now all we want to do is figure out whether we want to jump, right? We just want to set the processor condition code. That's how this thing works. It does all the work of a normal jump true. We have to, you know, this thing, we did the comparison, it's yes or no, right? We have one bit of information. And to communicate one bit from here to here, we made ourselves a new integer object. We pushed it on the tickle stack. We popped it off the stack. We said, oh, let's make sure it's a Boolean. If the Boolean was true, do this. If it's not, do that, and so forth. A whole lot of work to communicate one bit of information. But we can specialize here. We've got it all together in one spot here. So we just take our bit and we stuff it in the condition code register, and away we go. This saves a lot of time. Another idea, the idea I did presented at IVME last year, and I think is the idea that you guys invited me down here to talk about, but it's not such a good idea, so I didn't talk about it. But this is sort of a summary in the paper if you want. And what you do here is you inline everything. So you notice there's no bytecode on this slide at all. Well, there's only native code. We get rid of all the bytecode by inlining everything. And we can the operands, where do they go? Well, we just put them right here in the native code. And we can get rid of the virtual program counter altogether. It's gone. We actually compile stuff with this sort of very dumb compiler. It's really complicated. It's not very portable. It works really well for some languages, because some other people have now started to do this for Forth and Java and stuff. It doesn't work very well for Tickle, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But it does get you zero cycle dispatch in the best case. So how does all this stuff do? Well, the standard for evaluating Tickle interpreters is TickleBench. It's a lot of micro benchmarks. There's not a lot of real big meaty programs in there. There's only 12 that have more than 100,000 dispatches in them, but it's the standard. What we do is we focus on the 60 that have more than 10,000 dispatches. Again, this is on the UltraSpark 3, and as a basis for comparison, we use a switched interpreter. And the bodies in every case are the same. And, you know, probably we should be messing around with the bodies, but we don't. So here's a summary. I told you about four different techniques, really. And this is, for each technique, I'm going to tell you the mean speed up versus the switched interpreter, this basic interpreter, averaged across all 60 benchmarks. And, you know, we don't really get a pretty big performance improvement. I mean, everything, most things go faster, but we don't really get into double-digit performance improvements. It's still only 12% until we speed up almost everything with this technique until we do that loop optimization. But that was just one optimization. I mean, there's a lot more stuff you could do. So a little more detail here. What you see here is the four different techniques. There's four charts, 60 benchmarks along the x-axis. And then on the y-axis, basically just the speed up over switch. So higher is better, right? So for direct threading, that technique I didn't really tell you about, but those two instructions that you can do, it just does the indirect, the load indirect jump, right? Six benchmarks slowed down, but the rest of them sped up, you know, a little bit. The best we can do is about 10%. That wild thing that I didn't really tell you about, we compiled everything, inlined everything. What happens is you run into trouble with the iCache. Tickle, it turns out, I'll wrap up. Already has iCache trouble. The bytecodes are fat. And when we start making copies of stuff, we inline everything, right? Inliners make copies. Then, boom, iCache just completely blows up. So sometimes you can win big. Like, this is clipped. It goes even higher than 30%. But, you know, we slow down quite a few benchmarks, sometimes by, you know, ridiculous amounts. Like, take twice as long to execute something. Here's the techniques we've just implemented recently. This fall, and you know, you can get pretty good speed up, not too much slows down. If you start to do those optimizations, things start to look pretty nice, right? We hardly slow down anything, and not by very much, and we can win, you know, about 30%. So just a little bit more detail if we have time, if you'll indulge me, or I can skip this. Okay, this is more detailed. So on the x-axis, we've got seven different benchmarks, okay, from TickleBench. For each benchmark, we've got five stacks here, okay? The stack on the left is this classic interpreter, and then we have our four techniques, okay? The four techniques I've talked about in the talk. And then in each stack, we have three colors, okay? The blue stuff is iCache misses. The chip is in big trouble, okay? Red stuff is compilation time, either the existing bytecode compiler or whatever native technique we've thrown on top of it, okay? So for switch, you know, there's never any native. But for the other ones, there's sometimes a little bit of native. It depends, okay? Most of the time, it's not a big deal. And then the green stuff is everything else. So in this case, lower is better, okay? This is actual, basically, this is execution time. So you want less execution time if you want to go faster, okay? Uncooperative hardware today. All right. So, you know, matrix multiply is a good classic compiler guy benchmark. We win. I mean, we speed up almost 20%. That's good. Here's a tiny little loop kernel factorial. This gets almost 30% speed up with our technique. The while loop, almost 40% faster, although there's nothing in that while loop. But, you know, I said when I said loops go fast, right? Loops with nothing in them go fast. Loops with stuff in them, you know, matrix multiply does quite a bit of work, and it goes faster. For each goes faster, too. This is not just for numerical computation, right? With Tickle's scripting language, you want to loop over big lists. Well, we speed for each up, too. We get into trouble over here on the right. You know, as you said, it doesn't get into trouble that much, but I brought out here to see the kind of trouble it does get into. We looked at these benchmarks. So MD5 has this huge inner loop, right? We coded up MD5 just in Tickle. It's wacky. It's like 12,000 instructions long or something. The iCache just blows up big time. In the other cases here, we can get into iCache trouble, but, you know, we win a little bit because we actually are compiling, so we go faster. Here's a case where these three benchmarks here, especially this one, they don't run for very long. But there's a big body in them. So, you know, compilation overhead is not amortized. The compiler is fast, but if you have a really quick benchmark, it's going to slow you down a little bit, and it does. But you win it back because you execute fast, right? So it's a good deal. We apply this technique in the CGO paper to Java and OCaml, okay? And we got some pretty good performance improvements. Tickle only got, you know, 5%. With the optimizations, we got 12%. But without the optimizations, we only got 5%. It's not really worth doing. Why is that? Well, some people at dinner yesterday, I think, basically figured it out. So here you've got a chart, a whole bunch of different benchmarks. Red ones are Tickle, and the blue ones are this other interpreter called OCaml. The y-axis, which is a log scale, by the way, okay, is the number of cycles it took to execute a whole benchmark, so it ran for a million cycles or something, divided by how many dispatches it did, how many opcodes it dispatched. So that tells you basically how many cycles it took on average, in that benchmark, to execute one opcode, right? So in OCaml, you can get a dispatch and the work of an opcode done in like 10 cycles, okay? So if you save, you know, 17 minus 6 or whatever is 11, I guess. If you save 11 cycles, you really improve things there because there was a lot of overhead and that's all gone. With Tickle, sometimes, you know, you have at least 100 cycles, and sometimes Tickle's a glue language, it's a scripting language, right? So some of those benchmarks that go off do I.O., a million, you know, 100,000 cycles later, you finish the opcode. Saving 9 cycles isn't going to really do you any good. So just to wrap up, we have this technique. It's pretty simple as compilers go. It's pretty effective, especially on certain languages. It's a little bit effective on Tickle. It gives you really fast dispatch, 6 cycles on the Spark, maybe even less on the Pentium. But dispatch isn't really Tickle's problem, okay? Where we won in this case, we got that 12%. We got the 12% because that layout of those synthesized calls is a really nice place to do optimization, and we're able to do these optimizations pretty quickly. And they got us that 12% speed up. So in the future, what we want to do is maybe inline some more opcodes. We inline push for a big win and the loops and stuff. And we want to port to some other architectures. We think the 12% speed up, you know, sometimes we get 40% or 30 or whatever, but 12% on average, you know, it's nice, but it's pretty trivial given that Tickle is 10 times slower than C. And I think we can actually, if we write a real JIT and we re-architect the bytecode engine, we can get up much closer to C performance, maybe, you know, a factor of 3 or 4 slower or something like that. That's about it. Any questions?
If I got it right, you're generating your dynamically generated code into data memory.
Yeah.
And then execute it.
That's right.
How will that, or will that still work with the new NX bit stuff that AMD and Intel are putting into their processors?
No, that's a problem for all JIT compilers, and you know, you just have to turn it off. That's right. You can tell the OS, you know, to basically. Yeah, on certain architectures, you need to mmap. That's right. That's right. Sean Clay? Yep. Well, it's just a call instruction, and on a modern CPU, there's no real C function. It's just a call. So we don't have to save the stack variables or anything like that. It's just a call. And on the Pentium, the call just disappears. Because it's a call, we know exactly where it's going. It just goes away. There's a question back here. Yeah, I just saw that. I mean, I looked like a year ago and there was nothing there, but now it looks like it's alive again. It looks pretty interesting. I'm going to look at that some more. Yeah. Thanks.